bum 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 bum
ping
bum 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 bum
ping
bum 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 bum
ping
bum 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 bum
ping bum 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 bum
bum bum bum
ping
bum 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 bum
bum bum bum
ping bum.
Friends sing together, la 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 la. Friends do things together, la 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 la. Friends laugh together, ha 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 ha. Friends make graphs together, la 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 la. Friends help you when you're in danger. Friends are people who are not strangers. Friends help you shift into a new place. Tell you if you've got food on your face. Friends are the ones on whom you can depend.
He's my friend, he's not my friend.
Friends are the ones who are there in the end. He's my friend,
they're not my friends.
If you trip over, I'll catch you fall. If you kick my dick, I won't break your balls.
If you get drunk and vomit on me, I'll make sure come on, you get on safely.
If you cross the road and a truck struck you,
I'll scrape you up and reconstruct you. I'll cheer you up if you're depressed.
If you get murdered, I'll avenge your death.
Friends walk together, la 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 la, pop and lock together. Me and him together, la 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 la,
me and Jim forever.
Friends go jogging at the track. Friends borrow money, never pay it back. Friends do not let friends do crack. Friends go out and grab a snack. Friends drink beer in the sun.
Unlike girlfriends, they don't mind if you have more than one.
Friends tell you when your fly's undone.
Murray, your fly's undone.
My Uncle John had a special friend. They dressed alike, his name was Ben. I've never seen two friends like them. They were very, very friendly men.
Boom, la 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 la.
Boom. Friends, friends, friends,
boom, la 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 la.
Friends, 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 friends,
boom, la 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 la.
Friends, 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 friends,
boom, la 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 la.
Friends, la 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 la.
Ping.
CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstud Show, the radio show where we talk about comics. Wow, my headphones are really sucking. Mariel, do you mind grabbing me another pair?
Yes.
The plug is not working so well.
What are you talking about? They work fine.
No,
for me.
It's going out on me.
Oh, works yeah. fine for me.
Yeah, I actually have to talk
blah,
to
blah,
people.
Blah, blah, blah.
Okay. Yeah, sorry about that, everybody. Inkstud CITR 101.9 FM. This is Inkstud Show, the radio show where we talk about comics. My guests today are two friends, apropos with the song, I guess. Derek Kirk Kim and Gene Yang. Have I got you guys there?
Yes. Yep. I'm here.
Awesome. All right. Now, I think, Gene, you may need to be a little louder. I can't tell yet, but I may tell you to go up and down.
I need to be a little louder. How's that?
That's good. And hold on a sec. I'm just going to change headphones. Thanks, Marielle. Okay. That is way better. Oh, nothing like wearing headphones where the plug's going out, and I won't be able to hear you guys. So, technical difficulties aside, the new book from both you boys is The Eternal Smile, a collection of short featurettes. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yeah, sure.
So tell me about the nexus of the book, where it came from.
You want to do that, Derek?
Why don't you do that, Gene?
All right.
Well, we did a book together a long time ago, like 10 years ago, called Duncan's Kingdom. That was eventually published by Image Comics in the late 90s as a two-issue black and white miniseries. And that sort of, you know, we just did it, and then we both moved on to our own projects. But it's sort of always stuck in the back of our minds. Like, we always wanted to collect it in some way. Unfortunately, that story is too short to collect by itself. It's only about 50-something pages.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually we came upon the idea of pairing it up with two more stories that explore the same themes, and that's what The Eternal Smile is.
Now, how do you guys collaborate?
Well, I do all the writing, and he does all the drawings. So he does the... Derek does all the sweat work, all the really hard work.
How does that...
I just get to find, you know, really pretty pages in my email every so often.
How does that feel, Derek?
I'm just glad it's over.
you feel like a slave boy, huh?
Yeah, I felt like Gene's little worker elf, I guess. But
he was basically like my gimp. It was like having my own personal Korean gift.
Exactly. He pulled me out of the closet and had me draw and put me back in.
Imagine a very well-dressed gimp.
What's that?
I imagine a very well-dressed gimp.
Yes. Thank you. But now that it's done, I don't even remember the all the time that it took to actually do it. Because, you know, once you get the book, it's like a baby being born, you know? You forget about all the hardships and just love having the book out.
And it looks gorgeous, man. This is like, it's so pretty.
It is a nice companion pieces to the original work.
Derek just did an amazing job, I thought.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Great for a gimp. I couldn't have expected more. I don't think I could think of a better gimp than Derek.
There may be some stiff competition, but we'll
yeah,
give.
Gee, don't you think a Chinese gimp would have been better?
Hey,
that's for sure.
Hey. Just so people know, Derek is the Korean American author behind Seeing Difference in Other Stories, Good as Lily, and Low Bright, and Gene's, I guess, most noted book is American Born Chinese, as well as Loyola Chin and the San Pellegrin Order, and Gordon Yamamoto, The King of the Geeks. Just to kind of get that out there, so people don't think I'm talking to a couple of raving racists.
We can be creators of those books and be raving racists. It's not mutually exclusive.
Where's the love, guys? The love. Did this?
He's probably the racist guy now, actually. he's always telling me that I'm basically Chinese.
How does that?
Is that what? What did I tell you?
He always tells me that I'm basically Chinese. That's like his favorite.
Yeah, I'm just dropping some history on you, that's all.
Has this collaboration ruined the friendship?
No, honestly, like, seriously speaking, Derek is one of my best friends. And that's part of why we can joke around like this, right? I mean, like, my wife is Korean, and if Derek really wanted to, he could really ruin my marriage by just forwarding emails to my wife, but he's never done that.
Maybe playing her certain song we'll play later on the show.
That's true.
Well, I gotta ride on Gene's coattails for a few more years, so I would sabotage my own career if I
You know, the way I got American Born Chinese published by First Second was totally by riding on Derek's coattails.
Well, tell me about how you guys met.
We met at APE in San Francisco years and years ago. Like probably 12 years ago. Was it 12 years ago?
Mm-hmm. It was like kind of the dawn of our careers, I guess.
Yeah. Jesse Hamm introduced us. I had met Jesse Hamm that day. I don't know how you met Jesse. How'd you meet Jesse?
I just met him at, actually, like maybe a year before at a WonderCon, which is like a regional show in in the Oakland area at the time. And it's more of like a superhero type convention. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I had a table. It was like, I think, my first table I ever had. And Jesse came over, introduced himself. And I guess he knew somebody else that was at the school that I was going to, which is the Academy of Art. And so Jesse knew me from his friend. And then that's how they got to know each other. And then the following year, we went to, maybe the same year, I can't even remember, but we went to APE together, which was only like the third APE or something. It was still in San Jose. And it was really, really tiny.
That's right. It wasn't in San Francisco.
What's that?
Yeah, we met in San Jose. I was thinking it was in San Francisco. I totally forgot that it used to be in San Jose.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the difference between San Jose and San Francisco?
There was nobody walking the aisles except the exhibitors. I remember that very clearly.
That's right.
But Jesse had stopped by Gene's table, and then he picked up a mini comics version of Gordon Yamamoto and The King of the Geeks #1.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought that over to our table, and I was flipping through it, and I really liked it. So then afterwards, there was like some kind of after party or something, and then Gene was there, and then we met.
And then Derek sent me a postcard about Gordon Yamamoto and The King of the Geeks. like a couple weeks later. And then we started mail correspondence. I don't know why we didn't do email. I guess, was it not invented yet at the time? I don't remember.
I don't think email was really, I don't think email was really that.
I guess people just didn't use it, right?
Yeah, well, if it's 12 years ago, it wasn't, I think I had an email account then, but, you know, I'm just saying, wasn't as used.
I'm pretty sure I did, too. I think you were the one that was out of the loop, dude. But we would write letters to each other, and then eventually.
I probably thought the internet was like a fad or something. It was going to go away.
That's right.
What is this thing?
Yeah.
It's all flashy and shiny buttons.
Yeah. Well, you know, Derek, actually, I remember in the very beginning, we used to argue about computer stuff all the time. Like, I was always really pro-computers, and Derek was always really anti, until it came to putting comics on the web. And then Derek was totally pro. Derek wanted to put all of his work on the web, and I was like, if you give it all away for free, you'll never make money off of it. But I was totally wrong. You totally made money off of it. Give it away for free.
Blang, blang, yo.
Yeah.
Blang, blang. Now, let's
talk. You making money, Gene?
What's that?
You making money off your comics? Wow.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I wasn't supposed to tell you that, because you're the kid.
Yeah, just give him a... What was it I read in one? I was reading the Lowbright today, and you like to live off a steady diet of spam and fried rice, Derek?
Me? Yeah, that's like my standard dish, I guess. I have like, I don't know, maybe like 5 dishes that I rotate like every day, and that was one of them. But I kind of had to cut back on the just eating no vegetables. I mean, I had to start eating vegetables again because
Did you get scurvy?
My teeth are falling out as I speak.
Oh, that'll make this hour even more awkward than it is. Now, The Eternal Smile, tell me about, I guess, the themes that you guys are exploring in it. They're all very kind of sad stories.
That would be your department, Gene.
Yeah, Gene. Tell me.
I mean, the original story, Duncan's Kingdom, was really about the connection between fantasy and reality, and how people use fantasy. Maybe not people. How geeks use fantasy. Maybe how I use fantasy. and then when we wanted to expand it to a collection, we were thinking about different ways of connecting the stories, and that seemed like a natural choice to just do 3 stories about the same theme, taking a look at it from slightly different vantage points each time. I don't know. I don't know if I meant to make them all sad. I guess they are all kind of sad. But they're not, like, completely sad, right?
They're,
I don't know if...
They're kind of...
You wouldn't say that they're tragedies, would you?
No, I wouldn't say they're tragedies, but I'd say there's an underlying sadness that resolved sadness, maybe?
Hmm.
I don't know. I don't want to give too much away within the book.
Well, after Duncan, I think Gene felt a little guilty because Duncan's Kingdom is kind of, it's sort of down on any kind of fantasy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of, it's kind of anti-fantasy or having a fantasy life. And I think Gene felt that was too one-sided. So he wanted to do a couple more stories that kind of rounded out that theme, where it's not always negative. You know, it can be empowering or something like that.
Did you play Dungeons and Dragons as a young man, Gene?
I did.
You did? I didn't know you played D&D.
I'm sure you did too. But I did. I was both. I was on both sides of the dice, I guess you would say, right? I was the DM, and I was also, I don't remember. I was like an elf or something. I don't remember.
The Dungeon Master, for those that don't know what the DM is.
Yeah, that's right. That was actually a lot of fun. I remember. I mean, it's just sort of like it's sort of like just being a storyteller, right?
Mm-hmm.
I really liked being a DM. Unfortunately, we didn't play for very long.
How old were you?
All the other kids grew out of their geekiness before I did. I think I was in like 5th and 6th grade. It was definitely before junior high, because in junior high, I became really aware of girls. And very, very self-aware of my own geekiness. And I definitely try to run away from anything that was geeky.
And that's
great.
Pretty thoroughly explored in American-born Chinese.
Yeah, I guess so. It is. It is from a more ethnic.
Mm.
But I stopped, like I read comics when I was in fifth and sixth grade, and I stopped in seventh and eighth. And then by the time I got to freshman year in high school, I just realized that it was hopeless, that I would never not be a geek. So I started reading comics again and doing all that stuff.
Acceptance is important.
You know? Yeah, I agree.
It's okay to be a geek. It's okay.
I was a hardcore D&D player when I was a kid.
What was your character?
Oh my god, I had too many. my favorite game wasn't D&D though. I like role playing games, but D&D was kind of like wasn't really my favorite. There's too many rules, you know, the advanced D&D second edition, whatever. It's like it becomes more like I don't know, it becomes kind of mechanical or something where every single action you take has to be rolled or, you know, whatever. And my favorite game was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, actually, the role-playing game.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah, and in that role-playing game, you get to pick an animal, any animal you want, and then you become an anthropomorphic version of that animal. And so in that game, my favorite character was a bat.
A bat.
It was a bat.
I am going to disclose something. I played a role-playing game for about 3 weeks, and I was a were... Was it a were-bat? No, it was a were-beaver.
What role-playing game lets you be a were-beaver?
It was this one that my friend made.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I remember doing that, too. I think I made up a role-playing game, too. I think pretty much any kid who played a role-playing game must have made something up like that, right?
It was my only dabbling, but it happened.
me and my cousins and my brother, we made role-playing games too. Dozens.
What was your? What's your favorite dice?
My favorite dice? I think I like the D4 just because it's so flat on every side.
Yeah, it's a good dice. I'm gonna play a quick song break. I'm gonna give everyone a little warning. The song I'm about to play, how do you describe it, Gene?
I think it's audio porn. It's not a good porn. It's like accidentally walking in on your grandparents doing it. Like, that's what it's like. And that's not what it describes. That's just how it makes you feel after you've heard it.
So, listener discretion be advised. The song is 3 minutes and 54 seconds long. And then we'll be right back with Derek and Gene. Inkset, CITR, 101.9 FM.
A dumpster covered in melon balls. They say I'm a nurse if it's no shiga corn, but you will believe when you see my horn that I use to fuck so many bimbos. P.S. That horn is a phallic symbol. Now I don't mean to boast, but my size is such. For me, normal sex is a titty fuck. Oh, I try to walk the streets like a normal man, with both of my legs and one leg in my pants. And when I get an erection, I want the FAA. When I ejaculate, FEMA comes heading my way. I'm a strain on a federal agencies. Can I help it that the ladies want to F my D.I.C.? And my balls, they're enormous and overgrown, bigger than the one that chased Indiana Jones. I love my shiga corn. He is the sweetest of them all, doing God knows what with Thompson in the bathroom stall. I do magic, I juggle, and I tap dance. I've got Japanese jeans, but I'm black in my pants. You all what you eat, then that makes me a twat. Cause even if you're on the rag, I'm Lestat. They call me a germaphobe, but I confess, I would touch doorknobs if doorknobs was breast. Come to the Piedmont branch, that's where I'll be. On the oversized shelf under D.I.C. I'll check you out, and if you got fans, you can place a hold on this barcode of mine. Hot patrons with glasses all wanna get on me, because I know who killed Hollow Thrombey. You wanna come over? Turn to page 9. I'll ram my chimney rock up your cave of time. I love my sheep a corn. He is the cutest of them all. Sitting by his telephone, screaming all his calls. They call me a player cause I got lots of ROMs. Had to replace my floor cause I kept dropping bombs. Girl, it's the truth, let me be blunt. I wanna shoot you like the dog in Duck Hunt. Symbolically that is, cause I am a lover with Mr. Dew pattern on my bed cover. If you're Taiwan, then I'm mainland China, but the US won't help when I strike your vagina. Got a ripe yeast infection? Oh, that's okay. I'll push a grape into you and make a Saturday. That's why ladies love me, what can I say? I love myself too, maybe 3 times a day. So many ladies, so little time. Are you a lady? Call me, 597-0539. He is my sugar corn. He is the greatest of them all. I shall ride him under the rainbow through a waterfall. I do magic. I do magic, juggle.
That was what's the name of the band, Derek?
They're called the Cuckolds.
The Cuckolds.
He had a band name?
Well, Jason plays with his friend Windsor.
I'm sure
together
he does.
They are the Cuckolds.
You feel dirty now. Actually, not even just dirty, but like you drink too much Slurpee or something. That's what you feel like, right?
Kinda. That whole brain freeze thing.
Yeah.
It's not right.
Actually, I co-wrote that song.
Thanks, Derek.
You did what?
I actually co-wrote that song. There's a very interesting story to that song.
let's hear the story. And just so people know, Jason Shiga, should have been awarded cartoonist of, oh my God, I can't even think of the name of the book. What's the name of the book? I can't remember right now.
What? Oh, Fleep?
Well, Fleep, he won for, I think,
Double Happiness, right?
Not Double Happiness, the library one.
Book Hunter,
there we go. Okay.
Yeah.
See, my brain's not working so well today. So, go ahead, tell us the...
Probably melted your brain a little bit. it's very weird. Like, Jason is also one of our best friends. And unbeknownst to each other, me and Jason Thompson, another friend of ours, were independently writing different songs about Jason. And I didn't know he was writing a song, and he didn't know I was writing a song, but we were. And I was writing like a folk song. So like the chorus part, you know, I love my Shiga corn, that was the part that I was writing. And then Jason was writing a rap song about Shiga. And then when Jason Shiga heard both our interpretation or both our songs, he decided to combine them into one. And then him and Windsor put them together and made I Love My Shiga Corn.
It's magic.
That's how the song came to be.
Magic. When you mentioned it in an email, I tracked down the video that you posted of the lovely wedding from, I guess, a couple of years ago, and shots of like Scott McCloud in a suit with this terrible Jason Shiga rapping over it. It's a piece of wonder.
Terrible.
Sorry, wonderful. Wonderful, Jason.
No, it was. It's terrible. It's magically terrible.
The magic of the Shiga
corn. I think it's awesome. I think Jason's awesome.
He is. I'm actually, even though I couldn't remember the name of the book because, like I said, brain seeping out of my ears. he is really wonderful, and I think people should check out his work. I guess you can get it from Global Hobo and Sparkplug would be the places to go.
Yeah.
Two very
he has,
fine.
He has a big book coming out soon too. What do you remember the publisher, Derek?
Yeah, it's he actually has a book coming out from Abrams next year, the big book publisher.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah. Those Abrams books are pretty
full
nice
color.
Looking.
Full color. It'll be amazing.
It will be. Yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah. It's called Meanwhile, and it's this Choose Your Own Adventure one.
Oh, I've got
all the apps. And
Yeah, he actually redrew the entire thing and colored the whole thing by himself. And it looks amazing. I think it's like the best work he's ever done.
Crazy.
Yeah, it really is.
Because that's a massive definitely book. That's like, what, like a 300-page comic, I think?
No, it's only like 120 or something.
Is it?
Like that.
It feels big. It feels big. So tell me, both of you guys in your own works kind of explore areas of, I guess, Asian stereotyping. How do you feel about that? About what you come across in your work?
Well, personally, actually, I mean, I've been asked that before, but I've never done a book like American Born Chinese or Shortcomings or something where it, you know, that's what the book is about,
mm-hmm.
or it directly addresses it or anything. I'm more interested in doing stories that, you know, that everybody, I guess, can relate to, but it just happens to star Asian Americans.
Yeah. I'd say, yeah, you know? your work is definitely more of a kind of a celebration aspect, but not being super celebratory, but like, you know, very putting it out there. Is that just part of your storyline? But I mean, American Born Chinese definitely, I guess, challenges that notion.
For me, it's like, I just want to have stories that are more reflective of just more like everyday life instead of addressing a particular subject. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
But it's an everyday Asian American life, though.
Well, yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, like, it just comes out, I think the parts of it come out naturally just because it stars Asian Americans. You can't really escape the fact that they're Asian Americans. So, you know, they're going to, if it is realistic to life, they are going to talk about stuff that probably only Asian Americans talk about, like, you know, being stereotyped or talking about, you know, I don't know, different kinds of ramen or something, you know. Like, but I've never actually addressed race as the central point of a book.
Gene?
Gene definitely with American Born Chinese is. I mean, American Born Chinese to me, I think, is like the Citizen Kane of that issue.
Do you want to speak to that, Gene?
Well, I kind of like Derek. I've always had Asian American protagonists before mm-hmm. before American Born Chinese, and it's the same thing. It was always incidental to the story. Like their ethnicity was incidental to the story. And I just thought since it's such an important part of how I understand myself, I wanted to do a story that focused on it. So that's what American Born Chinese is. It's also sort of my way of working in the Monkey King. I always wanted to do a Monkey King story, but well, there are like a billion, right? There are like a billion Monkey King adaptations out there. And the only way I could think of doing it in an original way was by using it as an Asian American thing, as a way of talking about Asian Americanness.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of looking at the identity. Now, Derek.
Mm-hmm.
In The Eternal Smile, tell me about the doodling in it, the different art styles you use and what kind of challenge that is and how you decide that. Excuse me, sorry.
Bless you.
Go ahead. Sorry, I was asking about the art.
Well, the art styles were kind of, for Duncan's Kingdom, we actually drew that like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So naturally, there's going to be a difference in terms of the way I draw now. So there's that. And then the second story is, you know, the style was kind of dictated to me because of the fact that it was supposed to be a send-up of Uncle Scrooge. So I tried to kind of draw it, in the style of a Karl Barks comic,
mm-hmm.
even with the four-tier grids and everything. And I try to infuse it with my own style too, but I definitely wanted to make it look like it was supposed to be Karl Barks. And then for the third story, that's probably the one that is more most like the way I would normally draw or approach that story, I guess, now, 10 years later, since we've done Duncan's Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, I also, Gene had this great idea of each story looking like it's supposed to be like from a different sector of comics, I guess.
Yeah.
So like Duncan's Kingdom was more like, I guess, sort of more like the mainstream, and then
it's like 90s Image. It's kind of like late 90s Image a little.
Yeah, exactly. And then
except that then he keeps proportion. Derek keeps proportion.
And he has ankles.
There's no pointy knees.
Okay. Anyway, so... actually, I just didn't hear what you guys said. What was that?
He was saying you keep proportion and don't have pointy knees.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah, I don't have like a giant mound in the ground that covers their feet or anything like that.
Yes, that's right. You should start looking into that. I think that's a good effect.
It'd be faster to draw for sure. Also Gene came up with this great idea where each story would have a separate cover, and each of the cover was supposed to look like a different comic.
Yeah,
like completely different artists and different kind of. Like I said, like a different sector of comics. So following that, I had to try to make the stories match the covers, too. So, yeah, that's a really long-winded way of what I was trying to say.
Now, is the work in the third story you're kind of more comfortable what you normally do now with your comics?
Yeah, I mean, it's... well, first of all, the actual storytelling, the format of the comic itself is also very different in the third story, not just the art. And that's the style that I actually use in my own comics, where I do all the panels separately and then combine them afterwards to put them together into a story page-by-page flow that I really like, because you can really control that if you do the panels first and then combine them later. And then also I've got into this thing where I move the balloons actually off of the panel itself, where all the word balloons are outside the panels, so that's something that I've been doing in my own comics that I utilized in the third story.
So you got a lot of leeway artistically.
On that one, like. For sure. I mean, on all of it. But actually, my thing is I wanted to stick as close as possible to Gene's thumbnails. Like in Greenbacks or Duncan, if you look at the thumbnails of my piece, I mean, in terms of the panel breakdowns, it's almost identical. Because, I don't know. Being, you know, like, I feel like the artist's job is to try to capture what was in the writer's head when he was writing it. So because Gene writes in thumbnails, I can actually see what was in his head, you know, pretty much in thumbnail form. So I just try to stick as close as I possibly could.
Well, Derek did reframe some of them, though, because there's I feel like when I thumbnail, I'm definitely limited, even unconsciously, by my drawing ability. So there are certain angles and that sort of thing that I just wouldn't thumbnail because my brain knows that I can't draw it. You know, so there are definitely panels here and there that that Derek reshoots, like he repositions the imaginary camera to a position where I just wouldn't, I wouldn't be able to pull that off.
Why don't you feel comfortable with your, like, I think you've got a great cartooning style.
Yeah, me too.
Well, thanks. But I think it's definitely limited, right? It's not, I'm a cartoonist. Derek's an illustrator. Derek's an artist.
I don't know. I think I'm very limited too, actually. I think we all, I think every artist, every cartoonist gets into sort of their own rhythms, you know? Like, if you have a certain kind of talking head shots, I think every artist has kind of a habit of kind of defaulting back into the way they would, quote-unquote, shoot that shot, you know? Mm-hmm. Use all these stupid film terms. But I think I have the same problem. Like, in certain kind of angles and things, I revert back to whatever I did before. And so I think that's what you do, Gene, and I don't think that's anything bad or anything. I think it's something every artist does. You know?
Yeah, but come on, let's be real, dude. Derek is just way more awesome at drawing.
No, but actually what I was trying to say was
we should leave it at that because there's nothing you can add to that. I'm right.
No, but what I was trying to say is it's not so much the what's in the actual panel itself, but in terms of the panel breakdowns, I try to stick as close as possible. Within the panel, yeah, I shift things around, but the actual panel breakdowns, I try to stick as close to Gene's thumbnails as possible.
I think I do trust Derek's storytelling. You know, like there are artists out there who are amazing illustrators who can render really well, but when they do a sequence of panels, it's practically unreadable because they just don't have
David Mack.
They don't have the storytelling chops. Yeah, but Derek, you know, Derek's a cartoonist. He's a beginning to end cartoonist in his own right. So I definitely trust his instincts.
And that's part of like we get each other, we critique each other's stuff a lot, and that's one of the reasons why I like having Derek read my stuff before I start penciling, mm-hmm. is because he has a good sense about that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think the reason the collaboration was so great for us was because we have such similar storytelling.
Aesthetics?
Did you say ethics?
Aesthetics.
Aesthetics, exactly. Yeah, we have sort of the same sort of storytelling aesthetics and instincts. I think that's a big one.
Yeah.
And even though our
ideals too, I think ideals. Like we would both practically like sacrifice anything for clarity.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Right.
Anything.
Well, almost anything.
And I think Gene and I are both very conscious of the page turn.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, we're both like real big sticklers of that, so I think that worked out really well too.
Which is funny because you're a webcomic kid.
I'm not actually. I started out actually in print. I didn't even start out in mini comics like most cartoonists. I just started out in print at Antarctic Press.
Okay.
A long, long time ago. And,
wow.
I put out a few issues of a series and everything, like just like, you know, your typical.
What was it called?
90s black and white crappy comic.
What was it called?
It was called Cell with a C. And
okay.
It was just this really awful, you know, I was still in college and, you know, it was really bad. But after that, I actually went the other way. After that, I got so disillusioned with the print comics world, I just decided to do mini comics. And then I started doing mini comics, and then I moved to Korea to teach English for a couple of years. And while I was there, that's when I came up with the website, because I wanted to kind of share my comics with my friends. But, you know, it's really hard just to mail back and forth from Korea. So I decided the best way would be just to put up a website. And then that's how I got into the webcomics thing. I never started out doing webcomics or anything like that. There wasn't really a webcomics community or world back in those days anyway.
Not like it is now. Oh.
No.
So, tell me what projects you guys got on the back burner now, or not on the back burner anymore, that this is done.
Gene,
I have a book that I'm working on with Tim Pham. Do you know who Tim Pham is?
Tim Pham? No.
Tim Pham, yeah. He's a Bay Area cartoonist, too. He did a mini-comic called Sumo. He does mostly mini-comics.
Mm-hmm.
And he did another one called Tin Fam is Awesome.
That's a great name.
Yeah. So we're doing a book together for First Second. It's tentatively called Four Angels, but the title might change, and it's loosely based on my brother's experiences as a med school student. My brother's a doctor now. He's a good Asian. And then when he was in med school, he just told me these crazy stories that I had to put into a graphic novel.
Is your family disappointed in you, Gene?
They were for a long time, actually. Well, not my family, mainly my dad. I was
disappointed
in the right word, but he was definitely worried about my financial future. Less so now, but for a while when I was teaching and drawing mini comics and living in a small apartment in Oakland, he was definitely worried.
And how about you, Mr. Derek?
Gene, you didn't tell him about the other book you're working on.
Oh, what's this?
I have another book that I'm both writing and drawing, and it's called Boxers and Saints, and it's a historical fiction piece set at the time of the Boxer Rebellion in China.
Oh, interesting.
In the late 1800s. And it's taking forever. I actually just finished scripting it yesterday. Not the whole thing. Scripting, like, it'll be two books, and I just finished scripting the first book yesterday. So I'm still penciling it. I've only got like 40 pages penciled in ink so far.
That was an odd rebellion. I studied it in school last summer, and it was interesting.
You did?
Yeah.
Nobody else has heard of it. It gets like a paragraph in most American textbooks.
No, we spent a good amount of time because it was quite a shift in relations at that point. Like, it was a big part of like the 75-year breakdown, I think, between East and West.
Yeah. And I think a lot of folks consider it the first modern war, right? Because it was the first conflict where people could follow it in the newspapers, and you would see photographs and that sort of thing.
It was also coming a prime example.
It was a media war. It was like the very first media war.
It was also an example of the fight between people with modern weapons and not modern weapons.
Yes, yeah.
And what happens with that?
Yeah. Although, man, the boxers came really close.
Yeah,
they really close to doing what they wanted.
They did get quite the momentum, but they also kind of believed, didn't they, that they could stop bullets?
Yes, they believed that they could be possessed by Chinese gods and that sort of thing.
Didn't really work out.
They could be superheroes, basically.
Pretty much, like Tai Chi superheroes.
Yeah, they believed they had superpowers.
So, check it out, folks. Go to, Wikipedia? Would that be a good idea? Maybe to have something?
Yeah, Boxer Rebellion. Or the Boxer Uprising. Some folks call it the Boxer Uprising. Because they didn't feel like it was an actual rebellion.
Yeah. No, it was not very much of a central authority at that time, so.
Yeah.
Now, Derek?
I read the... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I've read the first 5 chapters of 6 in the first book. Of Gene's version, and it's incredible. I think it's going to be Gene's best work when it comes out. I'm totally blown away by it, and it's a very Gene sort of take on the Boxer Rebellion.
They have monkey gods.
Yeah,
well, it's just, I don't know, it's just one of those stories where I read it and it's like only Gene could have written the story.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. I actually can't wait to hear what you think, Robin, because of your knowledge of Boxer Rebellion, because I had no idea what it was until Gene told me.
Yeah, I know if Colin was here, he would be glowing in his eyes on this topic, and then probably disappointed when it gets too focused on any kind of throwing of the gods and stuff. But what is it about the Boxer Rebellion that really jumps out to you? That's like, this is my next book? Because, I mean, like you said, like, cartooning is not easy.
The reason why I chose this topic is I feel like it sort of encompasses some of the conflict that I struggle with inside myself. So the way I come across it was, I'm Catholic, and I grew up in a Chinese Catholic community.
Mm-hmm.
So about 5 or 6 years ago, a group of Chinese saints were canonized, and it was the very first time that that Chinese Catholics were involved, acknowledged in any sort of formalized way, you know, in that dramatic of a formalized way by the Catholic Church. So the community that I grew up in had this big celebration, and I started looking into the lives of a lot of these, a lot of the canonized saints, and it turns out that a lot of them were actually martyrs during the Boxer Rebellion.
Oh.
So when they were canonized by the Catholic Church, the Chinese government actually protested, because from the government's perspective, the communist government, especially in the 60s and 70s, they actually saw the Boxers as patriots. You know, mm-hmm. they saw them as these teenage boys who risked their lives to defend their country. So they felt like their victims, you know, who were mostly Chinese Christians, were actually like traitors. They were traitors to their own country and to their own heritage.
Well, it's like a Western...
So, yeah. By embracing a Western faith and Western philosophies, they had really betrayed something that was intrinsically Chinese.
But...
So, I just feel like encapsulated in this conflict, in this Boxer Rebellion, is sort of this conflict that I feel inside myself, not just between my faith and my ethnicity, but even between the country that I live in now, like the Western culture that I live in now, and the Eastern culture that my parents were born into.
It's interesting, too, because Catholicism, that wasn't new at that point in China either. Like that?
It's been around for a long, long time. But I think what was new was the tie between Catholicism and maybe commercialism or this European merchant class that started making inroads into China. And I also think that that the government, the Chinese government, was just particularly weak at that point. You know, the dynasties were dying out, and with like sea travel technology and all that sort of thing, it just made a very interesting mix of people in China at the time.
It's a very, very fascinating time to read about the amount of just change.
Yeah, I mean, it's just pretty much every color of people under the sun were in China at the time, involved in that conflict in some way. You know, the Americans sent like an African-American brigade over, and there were Sikhs from India that were under British command that were involved. It's just, it was definitely a world conflict.
I think we're going to have a long talk when that book comes out.
Yeah. Maybe I should send you. Maybe I should send you the script. You're like the first person I've heard of who has actually read up on it before I brought it up.
That's it. Yeah. No, it was. I've taken. I covered it in a couple of courses in school, actually. So
that's awesome.
Now, Derek, what do you got going on?
I have a couple books going on myself. I have my next book that's for First Second that I'm working on right now, and I'm near the end of thumbnailing that one too, kind of like Regina's in his book. And that one's called Tune, T-U-N-E.
Yeah.
And it's, I always scared to describe it because it sounds so goofy when I just describe it. But it's the craziest story I think I've ever written. It's really strange and wacky and weird. And it's not like your typical, like, Slice of Life type comic. The ones I've mostly written now. It's about this art school dropout who can't find a job. So he's going around looking for a job, and he takes this job, and he ends up getting stuck in this world where art doesn't exist, where they don't have a concept of what art is, and it's actually illegal to draw, punishable by death. And so then he finds himself even more insignificant than he was before in his own world. And the story is about him trying to get back home. Like I said, it sounds totally stupid when I describe it, but hopefully it'll be entertaining. And then the other book I'm working on is being serialized in my Lobrite mini comics. And that story is called Hecka, H-E-C-K-A. And that story is probably the first book that I'm doing that I actually address kind of my life as an immigrant directly, or being, I guess, Asian American directly. And it's kind of based around my first year in America when I came, when I was 8.
Oh, wow.
And, that's what I'm working on right now.
And that'll eventually come up from First Second?
Probably. I mean, it's going to be, you know, it's going to probably take me like 10 years to finish, so. Who knows? By that point, if you know, I mean, I hope First Second never goes down, and I don't think it will. But you know, no. You never know. So,
are you going to put those on the web, Derek?
I don't know. I'm toying with it. I haven't really thought that far yet. Just still trying to work on the story. But I don't know. Are you planning to put the Voxer comic online?
I don't know. I think I'm allowed to put the first chapter up. I'm thinking about it. But Derek originally had Tune up as half empty.
Oh, yeah. It used to be, like, when I first started Same Difference, I had another comic, actually, that I was serializing at the same time.
Oh, okay.
And it was called Half Empty at the time. And eventually I just had to stop one of them because, you know, I couldn't just work on both at the same time. It was taking so much time because I also had a day job at the time. So I stopped Half Empty and I continued on with Same Difference. So now I'm kind of going back and finishing that story. And since that time, the story has really changed, so now I just decided to give it a different title and start drawing it from the beginning again.
Just start with a whole new art style?
Yeah. I don't know if the style is going to be that much different, but I mean, you know, I've developed and changed since that time, so it'll just naturally probably be different.
Well, that's a big thing I noticed with your work, is there's you utilize a lot of different styles, not only in this book, but in other books, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is probably my biggest, if I had to pick a weakness for myself, actually I have a lot of weaknesses, but one of them is that I always feel like I don't
you know, Gene's always talking about how, you know, like, not great as artists, but the thing about Gene's art is, first of all, it is great, and two, you can recognize it immediately that it's Gene's artwork, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you see his Monkey King, you know immediately it's Gene's, but I feel like I don't have, like, one style or something that people can just automatically know that it's me, like, or my work, you know? You know, you're never going to mistake a David Heatley drawing, you know? But I don't have that kind of solid, I guess, sort of stable art style, so...
You can always tell it's David Heatley by the pink bars.
Exactly. I heard they're thinking of making a movie of it or something like that, so I was wondering if the bars are going to be there.
Oh, I hope not. Well, lads, thank you very much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having us.
I think we're...
Yeah, thanks.
I'm at near the end of my hour here, and I've got to play a song still.
All right.
Well, thank you very much for having us on. It was a lot of fun.
It was great to talk to both of you. And I'll make sure everyone checks out the book, The Eternal Smile from First Second Books, as well as American Born Chinese from First Second, Same Difference from Top Shelf, and Good as Lily from the sadly lost Minx book line for teenage girls. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Thanks, Robin.
Bye. That was Derek Kirk Kim and Gene Yang, like I said, Eternal Smile and American Born Chinese and Same Difference by Derek, American Born Chinese by Gene, and Good as Lily is actually Derek writing and Jesse Hamm, who was mentioned earlier, drawing, and also Gene has Loyola Chin and the San Pellegrin Order and Gordon Yamato, King of the Geeks. I think that was from Slave Labor. Up next is some music, and then it'll be the French Connection at 3:30. I'm going to play PSA and then play their last song request and be out. Next week, Jillian Tamaki will be on. Well, everyone else in the world is at the San Diego Comic Convention, but neither of us will be. And the week after that will be Dennis Kitchen and local boy James Lloyd coming on to chat about the great Harvey Kurtzman. Talk to y'all later.
Saturday, July 25th, CITR sponsors the 20th anniversary of Vancouver's favorite summer tradition, Illuminaires at Trout Lake Park. Bring your lantern and join the procession of glowing handmade lanterns, led by lively percussion as we circle the lake. Performances start at 6 p.m., procession leaves at 9. A family fireworks display concludes the evening at 10:15 p.m. More information available at citr.ca and publicdreams.org.
Hardy.